I guess most important that you're aware of this and that you're thinking about it, and that as a leader, we are thinking about the pause and we're thinking about, okay, when can I take some time to recharge, recalibrate, rather than just saying, okay, I got to do it all. I got to do more, more, more.
Yeah. I was thinking what Daniel said about the saying is something along the lines of, if you don't feel you have 5 minutes to meditate, you'll need to take 50.
Yeah.
And the idea, you know, I suppose that's just sort of like, well, okay, I'll take five because I don't have 50. But I think it really means that when things are that sort of strung out or challenging, that's a really good time to take the pause, to take some deep breaths.
Welcome to the Ripple Leader Podcast with Chris Hutchinson. I'm your co-host, Seth Silvers, and every week on this show, I will sit down with Chris Hutchinson, founder and CEO of the Trebuchet Group, and have engaging conversations with one goal, to help you build clarity and confidence for leaders and teams. This season, we are hosting these conversations live on Fireside Chat, which means you can join us in the conversation. If you want to ask questions live, download Fireside Chat on your mobile device and tune in live to join the interview. Good afternoon, Chris. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good. Are we both in Colorado this time?
We are both in Colorado and I'm able to speak.
Were you not able to speak?
For most of the week.
Oh my. Did you just lose your voice?
No, actually I was in a meditative retreat for 6 days.
Ah, interesting.
Got to stop speaking on Sunday and started speaking, maybe it was Monday, and then on Thursday, midday.
That's incredible. And by incredible, I mean the actual essence of the word of hard to believe.
Hard to believe that I couldn't talk for like 3 days.
Not just you. It's just people. It's just, we can't.
It was really cool.
So out of the ordinary. So
hopefully it'll be a good thing to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're just joining us, welcome to the Ripple Leader Podcast. My name is Seth Silvers. I'm here with Chris Hutchinson, the CEO of the Trebuchet Group. And on today's show, we want to talk about the power of the pause and making space as a leader. And you may have just heard Chris mentioning this, but he just got done with a 6-day silent retreat. Chris, why is this an important conversation for us to have, talking about the power of the pause, and help us understand what you mean by this?
Sure. I think the power of the pause has a lot of different facets to it. Some of it is taking time to step back and reflect, whether you're a leader or somebody in a position to be having, and making sure that things can be, you know, you're seeing things for what they really are rather than just sort of stumbling forward to what's next.
Right.
I think the pandemic definitely put me in a spin of that way. And it's also just reflecting and taking time with others and being present. That's a really important part of being a leader.
Yeah. Do you see this as primarily for myself as a leader? I need to make space for myself, or making space for others, like making space for the people I'm leading to have access to us? I'd love to provide some clarity on that, because I could kind of see this going two different ways.
Well, it is both ways. I will say that from my experience,
you were going to say both.
Yeah, I knew I was going to say both, but it starts with yourself, because if I'm not able to give space for myself, it's virtually impossible that I give real space for somebody else.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the classic airplane example of, you know, please put your oxygen mask on yourself before your 3-year-old kid.
Right. Since it's about 7 seconds, if you really were in that situation before you'd pass out. So you don't have a lot of time to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this is fascinating. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. I'm also looking forward to hearing from our audience on what are some ways that we're pausing in our life. I know for me, I've realized that my wife is way better at enjoying like the moment. I'm always thinking about what's next. So I'm always thinking about like, or it's not always because I've gotten better, but it's natural for me to think about what's next to the extent that I'm not fully appreciating, you know, where we are right now. Mm-hmm. I'm also better at being on time than my wife. So that's a piece of it too, is, but I've realized, you know, there's times where, oh, okay, cool. Does it really matter if you're on time, if that means that you're not present where you're currently at because you're thinking about where you need to be? So I think mm-hmm. this has been a constant evolution for me. So I'm looking forward to hearing from others about what they're learning and different things. When did this become a major point of focus for you, Chris?
You, in terms of, well, and there's the pause of sort of stepping back and seeing, what am I doing anyway, rather than just doing it, which can happen anytime. And from the meditative retreat that I was on, they strongly encouraged all the leaders there when going back home to take that time just to step into the space of not thinking about what has been or will be, but just be sort of there in the moment. And it's interesting that the thoughts that pop up and the clarity that I received, at least. But from a retreat standpoint, if anybody's, well, and I'd be really curious of from the group, if anybody has had taken a pause, step back, time for themselves, or helped somebody else where it's made a difference. It would be really cool to hear people's stories, especially if a leader did it for you, or if you did it for somebody else or for yourself. It was about 4 years ago that I got a little note, and it was called the Do Nothing Retreat at the time. So luckily, the place where they're actually having this retreat is up in the Colorado, northern Colorado foothills, about 35 miles away from here. Little did I know that most of the people would be flying from around the country to come to this place. And so with about 30 other leaders, we spent a week together learning about meditation, not from a Buddhist philosophy point of view, but from sort of the contemporary mindfulness point of view and the power of it and learning how to do it and taking longer and longer times meditating, walking, sitting. And then finally, you get to this point where you go into silence and you're not helping people. You're not writing things down. You're not reading. You're not listening to things besides just what is, and doing extended periods of kind of nothing. Very, very powerful, incredibly intense dreams, lots of clarity around things that were right in front of me that I just wasn't seeing. So I was just a little too caught up in what was happening to notice what was really happening.
What were your expectations going in to this silent retreat? And were those met, or did those kind of shift over the week?
Well, they shifted. I've done three times. This is the third time. We skipped one in the middle of COVID. My first expectations were that I would be able to reflect and think and plan and write. And, you know, this is great. I don't have to talk, so I can take all this creative energy. And I was really stunned to find out that there was more creativity by sort of not being creative, by not writing things down, by not capturing, like, oh, I need to remember that thought for later. I have to remember that to do. It was like, okay, I'd have that thought and go, interesting, there's a thought, and there it goes. And I just let it go. And the good ones would show up later, but it was really hard for me at first. The hardest thing was the meals, Seth.
Interesting. Like, because, were you having meals with other people?
Yes. However, you're not to make eye contact. You're not to hold the door for anybody. You're not to, oh, they need water, I'll give them the guy. You're basically just really paying attention to yourself, which felt really selfish to me. And then I realized that while I was doing those things for out of a good naturedness, I was kind of imposing myself a little on people. I'm in a nice way. But, it irritated me to heck when I was, the meals drove me crazy for the first year. And the second year, I was like, I think I see the reason for this. It's just to really appreciate what is and not see yourself as needing to do something for someone else, just to be with them.
Right.
That doesn't sound like any kind of leader problem, right? There's no leaders that just like, you just need to, you don't feel pressure that you have to do something for someone, that you can just be with them. Do you, Seth? Just checking, right?
Not at all.
Never.
No, I'm fine.
I'm sure nobody has that, right? Because that's what leaders do, right? Leaders are supposed to do, not leaders are supposed to be.
Yeah, and that gets to this, I mean, this big kind of elephant in the room with leadership, which is, you know, doing, not being, this concept where leaders, we do feel the pressure to do. We feel like we look at leadership positions or being a CEO or being a team leader, whatever kind of position you're in, or even just leading the people around you. And we kind of look at, okay, what can you do for me? You know, what can our leaders provide? Mm-hmm. And so it feels very counterintuitive to step back and pause. And even I'll kind of be transparent. I've been working with my coach on some different challenges related to this. And I've had a hard time being as productive as I wanted to be. And so we're doing an experiment where I actually work less, which feels like the total opposite direction, in a sense of like, oh, I want to get more done. And so I'm actually working less. I'm working more strategically in that, being forced to delegate more, all of these different things. But it's this counterintuitive nature where we feel like we have to create, and provide for the people that we're leading. But at the same time, we have to take care of ourselves. We have to pull back and pause. And in a weird way, it seems like that adds value. Do you feel like you coming back, you're more positioned to be able to serve your team and your clients better?
I hope so. I mean, it's interesting that I think, and I'm wondering from the participants, the folks in our audience here, if they have experience around this, like do less to do more, or it's almost a frantic, like, I don't know. I had somebody say it was fear of missing out. And for me as a leader, it wasn't fear of missing out. It was fear of not being enough supportive enough, you know, like letting people down. And that's what was driving me. I was like, oh my gosh, if I'm not there for so-and-so. But in that franticness that could develop, I was missing out on the real signs and taking the real time. And sometimes it's just almost sitting and listening to someone about what they're wrestling with. Yeah. So being able to do that in a way for myself in the meditation retreat, so I'm not going to really think about anything. And funny enough, all the thoughts bubble up that I probably needed to pay attention to.
Yeah. So coming back, Chris, what are some other, are there some new ways that you're going to be taking kind of pauses and making more space for yourself as a leader as you come back from this?
Yeah, I was just talking to Katie, who between the two of us, she wrestles my schedule and I just kind of try to follow. So
right.
One of the things that we've done in the past is I noticed that in the mornings I had more creative time and I get up for people for meetings. So if I had meetings in the afternoon and creative time in the mornings, that worked. If I had morning meetings, I was just kind of like, yeah, whatever, by the time I get the afternoon. So I think we're going to try to set aside more sort of creative open space in the mornings and use my natural desire and ability to meet people where they are in the afternoons.
Yeah.
The challenge is, awesome. I think that'll take effect in about 2 months based on my schedule, but you know, you got to start someplace.
Yeah. You got to play in the pause. Well, I want to welcome Daniel to the stage. Daniel is a veteran, a realtor, and most importantly, a father. So Daniel, we'd love to hear from you on kind of what are your thoughts on this phrase of the power of the pause, making space as a leader, and how do you see this play out in your life?
I've actually participated in an 8-week mindfulness course for stress reduction and pain reduction, so people can get off those medical Percocets and whatnot. My purpose for it was sponsored by my broker at the time because he noticed that agents will increase their sales.
I was thinking I was hearing a baby there. That's already lowering my blood pressure. Keep going, Daniel.
So it was $500 paid by the managing broker. I'm like, mindfulness. I'm like, I've been reading about seven deadly sins and Buddhism. I'm like, oh, you know what? This is perfect, actually. Wow. Fantastic. And it's free. And some great exercises. Most memorable is This Too Shall Pass. Mm. And also what I really liked is, as you mentioned, we did an 8-hour retreat, no talking. And I have, a tendency to want to do something. I'm always shaking my leg, restless mm-hmm. leg syndrome or something mm-hmm. going on. And it was challenging. And at the end of it, I still don't forget that odd feeling of, I took the train to downtown and just standing on the platform, like, did I just go 8 hours without talking and fidgeting? And it was surreal.
Wow.
It didn't really affect my sales per se, but it did help me in other aspects as far as those 70,000 thoughts a day, incurring, you know, giving them compassion and asking to leave. That was the game changer for me, is more clarity. All these junk thoughts, it's like sugar, junk food. It's like, oh, it's mine, it's there. And then you wonder who put it there. I didn't request it.
Nice.
What it
sounds
really
like it
did,
had a pretty big impact on you.
Well, yes and no. At that time, I want to say no. I'm like, I can see this reducing people's stress and pain. I can see this increasing people's sales. But for me, I'm a loose cannon, as I mentioned. It didn't really help me and all that. I just, I would carve out. Another memorable thing was, if you can't carve out 5 minutes, you need to carve out 50 minutes to meditate.
You're right. Right.
So that stuck with me. And you know what? It really helped me slow things down. And what it really did is prepare me for negotiation training. There is a tool in it called Dynamic Silence. It is by far the most difficult tool for people to use.
That sounds like a really fancy word, just to not talk while somebody else is showing.
You know what? They had to make it fancy, because it's like, what? Be quiet? No, that's pointless. That's useless. That's not useful. Are you kidding me? That's like the most useful. These guys are like, you know what? Dynamic Silence is like their second most useful tool.
That's such a cool name. I imagine with a little trademark after it, Dynamic Silence with the TM, you know.
It is.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing, Daniel. I think that sounds like a neat experience. And I think experiences like that often have the impact where in the moment we're like, well, I don't feel super different now. Like, I'm not making more money. My team's not happier with me. Like, it doesn't feel like we have this immediate impact. But at the same time, we see over time that some of those little changes of, you know, not having so many random thoughts throughout the day, you know, being able to meditate more throughout the day, those are the things that tend to have the long-term effect. Chris, I'm curious if coming out of the 6-day retreat, you're maybe more experienced because you've done this 3 times. So maybe after that first one, did you come back and did you feel like, oh, cool, that made a huge impact, and you know, X, Y, and Z, or did it seem like, well, okay, now what?
I guess I'm going to connect with what Daniel said in that, you know, it didn't seem like it made that much of a difference. Of course, it was really different when I was doing it, and then I sort of came back, and some habits I hung on to for a while, and some habits I think faded a bit, but just. I guess I mean, you know, I was thinking about when Daniel was talking about the dynamic silence and giving that space for another person to think, and that little pause in there that I'm not inducing myself in someone, but I'm actually giving them room to think and consider and reflect, giving them a pause in a way, is the way that people can make decisions and change their thinking and shift. And so I think it's a really powerful way to do it. It's I guess it's resonating for me in terms of when I just allow myself not to push on a conversation, that pause gives a person the space to be able to share what they're really thinking. And maybe they didn't realize they were thinking it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I spent time this morning. It was only 15 minutes, but it was 15 minutes. I spent time in silence meditating because it's one of the things that I want to do. I know the value of it. Growing up, I did not. Growing up, I thought meditation was weird. I thought like, well, you don't need to meditate. You just need to pray. And that was kind of from the background that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And then as I've grown up, I've realized, well, prayer has a very important place. And I also believe that meditation does. So, but I can relate to that feeling of, you know, you finish meditating and it's like, well, okay, what did I not do in that 15 minutes sometimes? But then I think the power of the pause, you see it impact your day because there's more margin. You see it impact your team because you have more understanding with your, yeah, I think that's just like a really profound thing of that Daniel was mentioning, that you mentioned of like, yeah, in the moment, the pause feels at times like a waste of time, but mm-hmm. in the long run, we start to see those pauses add up and end up impacting a lot of different areas.
Yeah. I'll share something that sort of came to me as the group was coming back from silence, which was also interesting that you had two people would get together, you wouldn't make eye contact, you'd sort of sit shoulder to shoulder, but facing in opposite directions, and just start whispering about like what was the experience about. And then at the very end of that, you'd make eye contact with that person, then two other people would come together and you'd actually face each other and you could talk a little bit louder. And there were some specific questions about what realizations there were, what thoughts have gone on. And that step back, we were kind of just stepping back into talking, into connecting with each other in an intentional way. And we're in this big circle, and it just, as people were going around, I just got this incredible image. And it was this song that was running through my head, which is also a poem. Seth, do you know the Two Roads Diverge in the Yellow Wood? It's a Robert Frost poem. It's kind of famous.
Yeah.
You know, there's a song that I sang in, I think, high school or something. And I'm hearing this song sort of go in my head. And literally, I at one point on the last morning, I walked up this road and there was the well-traveled path off to left. And there was a little road that went out, so it was less traveled and went off to the right. I went off that road and it ended up in a little kind of shrine area. And as I was sitting there quietly for a little while, a big angry moose came by. And had I not taken that road at that time, he probably would have come up right behind me I was on the path. So I'm thinking, this is probably a good thing. Just sat there and he'd sort of grunt and look at me and move on. But so he left. And then I thought, okay, so maybe it's not good to take the road less traveled. And I'm sitting in a circle thinking this. And I had this image of all these kind of rough strands of threads, and they kind of came in and they were all threading through one little teeny bead, and the bead was the present. And these were all the things that built my past, all these different things that came in, and going forward were all these different possible futures in all different directions. And the only thing I could do is I could just move that bead forward. And so the thing actually clicked in my head. It was like, it's not the somewhere ages and ages hence, I'll be telling this with a sigh, this road choice has made all the difference. It's like every single moment I'm making a choice on which path I'm on. Am I on the well-traveled path? Am I on the one that is going to mean more to me? And it doesn't stay that way. I have to keep making those choices. And just being in that sort of meditative space where I was really aware of what was happening, I was like, I'm doing this all the time, even though I don't realize I'm doing it. I get caught up in the future or I agonize about the past, but really it's about the now. How am I going to show up? And how am I going to honor the people that are my family and my team? And how can I make the difference I want to make with them? And sometimes just by being there for them when they're struggling.
Right. What did you learn in your retreat about those moments where you're staying in the moment and not thinking about when the retreat's over, or not thinking about your next meal, or not thinking about whatever's next? I think that's even harder to do when, I would imagine it would be even harder to do in a silent space. And I know for me, like, that's hard to do when I'm meditating or when I'm taking pauses of a variety. It's hard for me just to sit in that moment. So were there some nuggets that you kind of like learned or struggled through when being forced to enjoy the moment?
Oh yeah. Well, and it sort of be in the moment. I enjoy was sometimes optional.
Yeah, that's true.
So and I know people, I don't know our audience, if there's some folks that have more experience with meditation. I've done it for several years and I know there's people that master it, and you know, so maybe somebody has some of that. The thing that I learned, one of them was they talked about hot and cold boredom. And the difference, like, hot boredom is I'm sitting there and I'm like, when are they going to ring the freaking gong? And I'm hungry and I'm tired and this, and my back hurts and I don't know how much longer I can do this. That's the hot boredom, where you're just irritated. And then the cool boredom is the place where it's just, you're just kind of there and almost detached from what's happening. It's not really affecting you, but there's no need to go strive for anything. And they just sort of, you just are. I had hot boredom more than cool boredom. And the teacher even said, you know, hot boredom just kind of says, you know, like, how is that like the rest of your life? I mean, are you irritated at stuff? And why be irritated at your muscle? It just is. So I don't know if I got a clean nugget on that. I think I still have some ore I have to sort through, Seth, but I think it's in the bucket here. And I, if I keep digging around with it and you know, maybe dusting it off for, I don't know, another year or two, I might find something.
Yeah. When was the first time that you had, I mean, you said it was about 5 years ago that you started realizing the importance of the pause, but was there like a first time that you can think back and remember to just realizing silence, maybe meditation, maybe just some form of pulling back that you realize like, okay, this is, there's something to this. Was it 5 years ago, or was there times earlier in your life where you realized, okay, there's something to this?
You know, I think using that sort of yarn through the middle of the bead analogy, the difference that I had then was so tiny. It's kind of what Daniel was saying. It didn't really seem like much, but if I look over time, I can see it made a difference. I'm actually going to go to something, believe it or not, it was as a consultant and a coach and somebody who's helping others, I need to help them on their path. So making pause and space for them. And this, it's kind of a strange example, but my coach was telling me I was going to meet with the CEO of this pretty significant company. I'm finally getting an opportunity. And he's like, yeah, you can come to breakfast with me and like my top six deputies or something. I thought, oh boy, this is going to be interesting. And I asked my coach about it. And he said, well, I would give him space and ask four questions. And I think, I don't know if I shared this before, but they were, what are your plans? You know, what does great look like? How's it going? How might I be able to help? And in an hour, I think I said two or three more sentences than that, but that's all I said. And he just talked and talked and talked. And at the end of it, and an hour, we were at a restaurant nearby here, you know, and I could tell it was really working because his entourage was just like shocked that he was talking all this time. And because I think they expected me to try to sell him. And at the end of it, when I said, well, so what kind of things could I do to help? And he's like, I want to set up a 9-month contract with you and the organization. I think it has to be under $120,000. And we need to get your help to really be able to help focus what we're doing here. And it had not been sitting between two people in suits or whatever, I would have fallen over because I was like, how the hell did that happen? So that was a hint of, and Daniel was saying, like it was negotiation, but I didn't realize it was negotiating. I was just being curious and open and willing to listen in a way that was supportive. And that space for that pause I gave to that CEO, I mean, it ended up being a significant part of the growth of my business that year.
Yeah, as opposed to just trying harder to win the sale.
Yeah, say more. Tell him what you can do. It was really about being there so he could be brilliant. Yeah. And I think that's the same thing for leaders. I mean, I want my team to feel brilliant. I'd be like, well, Chris is really knocking it out of the park today. I want them to go, man, I am awesome. And look what we can do together.
With your clients that you have now, is this part of what you're helping them understand? Is some form of pause, margin, you know, as a leader taking a step back? And if so, kind of how are you talking to your clients about this?
It depends on the client. A lot of leaders are in the place you and I are, Seth, and maybe some of our audience too, where they're into so much activity that the impact that they're having is diminished. But it doesn't feel that way. It's counterintuitive. They're driving down the road with their foot stomped on the accelerator and they're sliding on the ice. And if they slowed down a little bit, it would make a difference. Usually, I'm not saying, hey, let's go do a meditative retreat. I'll be honest there. I'm not prescribing medication or retreats or anything. But a lot of times I'll try to ask questions about, you know, what's the impact you're having? What seems to be making a difference? How much do you need to be versus how much do you need to do in this situation? And by asking reflective questions, I help not only them reflect, but also know what it is like to have reflective questions asked of you. And so they it's sort of mentoring or shaping what's possible for them. Because a lot of times they'll come back and say, you know, that question we were talking about, I asked that of my, you know, the number three person. And we just had a fantastic conversation around that. And I could really see that there was a lot they had to offer that I just wasn't really aware of. So it's probably active pausing without pointing at it, Seth. I'm probably falling in the trap of, I don't want to really, really point out because people would go, well, that's like meditation. That's like weird. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is interesting when you get into a high level coaching space. And I mean, people, you hire coaches and different people to, at the end of the day, it's to grow your business. You know, I think with a lot of people, there might be some exceptions to that, but I think that it would be, it'd be interesting, to be in the position of a consultant where, I feel like you'd have to dress it up correctly to be able to say, well, like you need to incorporate more pauses, incorporate more rest into your rhythm as a leader.
Yeah.
You have to dress that up. It would be heard by the person you're talking to.
Yeah, that's interesting because I yes and no. So the yes part is I think, and one of the reasons I sort of this nervous tick, you can't see my eye twitch when people say consultant or I say consultant, because that I think it does, consultant conveys that I know and you don't. And I need to tell you, and someday you'll learn to understand my wisdom and accept it, right? And I twitch because I think it really is about helping people remember and realize that they probably already know. And it's more an application that matters. And I want them to feel like they could do it for the rest of their life, not like I need Chris around all the time. So it's interesting. Sometimes there's folks that, you know, I as a leader, I want to do this. With my kids, I want to do this. I don't want to be the person that's telling them what to do all the time. It doesn't work for me. So I'm asking questions and have little scars across my tongue when they tell me a plan. And I'm like, I wonder how that's going to go. And I'm thinking in my mind, oh my God, that's like the worst choice ever. But I'm not them. And they need to live with it. I mean, if they'd like, let me go run out in traffic, I'd be like, nah, I don't think that's a good idea. But if it's not going to hurt them permanently, I think it's really important for them to try their ideas and feel that they can be, have the capacity to make their lives what they want it to be. So it's really similar for me. And it's, I think the hardest part about it and the reason I need to pause is because to watch other people struggle and feel like I can make a difference feels like I'm letting them down.
Right. Yeah, it is. I think it is something that needs to be incorporated into all of our lives, but it's just going to look different for different people. So I'm curious to just know, like, what things are you doing, Chris, to incorporate pause into your life? And, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some that are more on a personal level and some that are maybe on a business level. And I'd be curious to hear some of both.
Yeah, cool. So the I did get one of the cool square cushions that I can sit on for half an hour if I need to, and my knees don't hurt too bad. So my wife and I have been doing 10 minutes almost every morning, and just have a simple little 10-minute timer that counts down, and it's just a simple meditation where we're doing it. I fell in love with the loving kindness meditation, Seth. Have you heard of that one?
I've heard of it, but I couldn't tell you anything about it.
Yeah, I got a little deeper into it. So the idea is starting with someone who unconditionally loves you, you have these four wishes for them, and then for yourself, then for people around you, then for people you're struggling with, and eventually you can expand it out to, you know, the world and all beings within it. You just keep sort of, this is a little gentle thing you're saying in your mind. It's not mystical or anything. I think it's just really channeling your thinking. And so the first one is, so I do this on the 10 minutes frequently. So I'll say about my wife, I'll say, may Diana be safe from external and internal, from outer and inner harm. So it's being safe from harm. And there's outer and inner. Inner's been a lot during, I think for a lot of people during this time. The second one is, may Diana be happy. And they said, and find the root of happiness for them. And then the third one is, may Diana be healthy in mind, body, and spirit. And the last one is, may Diana, I say, be at ease and be filled with peace. And it's pretty interesting how that can change when I get to the person that I'm kind of pissed off about and I walk through those, I'm a little different at the end of it.
Right. I can imagine.
Yeah. And it's a super powerful way. So that's 10 minutes a day. That's not a lot of time. And it changes how I show up.
Yeah. So that's every day, every morning. Are there some things throughout your workday that you're maybe looking to, I like the word recalibrate.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. We frequently go on short walks every couple of days, usually down by the river. So it's a little, I guess, forest bathing or mm-hmm. walking alongside the river. We also have a little yoga routine that's just a stretching, breathing thing, you know, and I'm not the most consistent. And then I try not to beat myself up about not being consistent. It's just about getting back on. But yeah, I think doing something that's sort of breathing and being and then stretching and being, I find I have more energy at the end of the day. I show up less frantic. And I think everybody benefits from that.
Yeah. Well, and what I'm hearing from this, and even as I'm analyzing my own space and realizing like there's, I like to say I'm inconsistently consistent. I'll have a few days where I'm very consistent with things that that matter to me. And then something will throw my rhythm off and it takes like a week to get it back or something.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's more important that most important that you're aware of this and that you're thinking about it. And that as a leader, we are thinking about the pause and we're thinking about, okay, when can I take some time to recharge, recalibrate, rather than just saying, okay, I got to do it all. I got to do more, more, more.
Yeah. I was thinking of what Daniel said about the saying is something along the lines of, if you don't feel you have 5 minutes to meditate, you'll need to take 50.
Yeah.
And the idea, you know, I suppose that's just sort of like, well, okay, I'll take 5 because I don't have 50. But I think it really means that when things are that sort of strung out or challenging, that's a really good time to take the pause, to take some deep breaths, just to infuse your body with oxygen and not worry about what you got to do next. Just sort of be in it and watch things as they go by and like, well, that's an interesting thought. That was in the past. That's in the future. Okay, now I'm in the present.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an important way of looking at it. You know, Chris, as we bring this conversation to a close, would love to just know, you know, from you, what's maybe some encouragement as our audience that's listening here live and on the podcast, as they're kind of just wondering like, okay, I just don't know how I can take space as a leader where they, I mean, typically, if you are in a position of whether it's management or CEO, you know, we've associated that leaders have more responsibility. That's not always true, but the feeling and the pressure is often there.
Oh, yeah.
Where you have to do more, you have to create more. So I'm not asking for myself in any way.
No, of course not. Of course. You're just trying to help out other people.
Asking for a friend.
Yes.
When we feel overwhelmed with how much we have to do, what would your kind of advice or encouragement be to help us to take more pauses, to incorporate this into our rhythm of leading? Mm-hmm.
So two tips. So I'll give you the absolute most basic one. I don't even know if this counts for meditation. It's where, so three breaths in a cycle of three, and you do one where you breathe with your chest. So you breathe with the upper chest, you go, breathe through the upper chest, and then you breathe sort of with the middle of your chest, try to make that come out, and then you breathe through your stomach really, you know, deep, where people, you know, you don't want to see your stomach bulging out, but that's where we breathe from, which is a really inflate your stomach. And you do that three times in a row, and the person who told me to do that, and I was like, oh, you really? I mean, it takes less than a minute, and I was already in a better place. So that's the sort of the little reset button you can hit. For people who are taking on meditation, I think there's been some amazingly good apps. I think Headspace is one of them, and they do guided meditations where somebody's gently talking you through. And that's also, I think, helpful because rather than having your mind whirl about and you're like, what do I do with this? I'm not supposed to have thoughts. Oh, I'm having a thought about not having thoughts. Oh, well, you know, it's just do a guided meditation and just try a couple of those out and see, I don't know, try them for a week. And see if that starts making a little bit of a difference, a little bit of space between the stimulus and the response that you're going to have, you know, where you can just breathe a little in there. I hope that people try that out and see if that makes a difference for them.
I think those are two, those are great and those are simple. And yeah, I think it's easy to chase your thoughts right out of follow your thoughts. Your thoughts and tend to pull you right out of these meditative moments. And
yep.
I love that conversations like this are happening more often in the business space. I feel like a decade ago, it didn't seem like they were that common. And now it seems like it is something that people are more aware of, is how are we taking pauses and are we healthy? And unfortunately, that's because probably so many people have burned out because they've just thought, you know, I just have to work harder. So I think this is really valuable, and I'm excited to hear some of the feedback from people who listen to this episode on what they take out of it. So Chris, thanks for sharing. And I look forward to hearing, I have a feeling this silent retreat that you just went on is going to come up in future conversations because it sounds like a pretty impactful deal.
Pretty cool. Well, thanks. And I'm going to wish everyone to be safe and happy and healthy, be at ease and full of peace.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you all for listening to the Ripple Leader podcast. We have some exciting conversations planned over the next couple weeks. Next week, we're talking about how work is changing and talking about what's our role in that. We're going to spend a couple weeks talking about this topic of the Great Resignation, which you've probably seen articles about. So we'll talk about what it is and also why, what's going on in people. And we want to hear too from people, you know, what's going on in our culture that's causing people to all of a sudden want to change careers. So Chris, thank you as always for being present and vulnerable and sharing some of what's going on in your space. And to everybody else that's here, thank you for joining us. And we'll see you next time on the Ripple Leader podcast.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Ripple Leader podcast, where our goal is to help you build clarity and confidence for leaders and teams. Don't forget to join us live on Fireside Chat to get your questions answered each week. And if you want to get in touch with Chris and his team at the Trebuchet Group, head to trebuchetgroup.com. That is TrebuchetGroup.com. We'll see you next time.